heart.
Rolled out to my Chevrolet. Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning, good morning. Let me move my microphone up just a tad so I can hear myself. Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my daughter, Andy, and we're here at your service today. This is a car show. We talk about information that's important to you. We tell you what you should see and what you shouldn't see. We try to guide you through the process, make sure that you're aware of all the nooks and crannies associated with a service work in the car repair industry. So if you have a question or a call or a problem, or if, and we don't want you to name the shop. If you have some kind of a question, then maybe we can handle it if you have enough information. We've got a caller right off the bat, Tom. Tom, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for taking me.
You bet.
Mark, I have a 02 Windstar, and the it's intermittently the brake light comes on and the check traction control and all of that kind of stuff. What's your thoughts on that? And then it goes away, you know, and I shut it off and then start it up again. It's an intermittent deal.
I mean, the first easy thing would be brake fluid, right? Check brake fluid.
Yeah, but
the traction light comes
exactly.
on.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
You might have two issues. You could have a brake fluid level problem, but the fact that you got that traction control light on is going to tell us that one of the four wheel speed sensors is probably gone to sleep. Could be covered with mud. It could have chafed on the pickup assembly. There's lots that can happen. Here's what you can do to help yourself. If you drive the car and you find out that on a hard right turn, you typically get the light, that really helps us. Because when you take a hard right turn, the outer left side tires travel a longer circumference than the inside tire.
Sure.
And likewise, to the left. We have those kinds of lights on, and we're going to plug in, and it's not that cigarette pack thing that they use at the auto parts store, which just gives you a code. We don't care about the code. We're going to plug in and watch all four sensors. It's not uncommon for the four sensors, pretend, 22 miles an hour, 22, 22, 22, and 7. So we go do circles in the parking lot, left and right, and we reset it, and we go left and right, and all of a sudden it's still the same. The last one is 7, and all the rest are 22, or 0.
Got it.
That's all it is. So your diagnostic charge might be?
I would say probably somewhere between 70 and 140, maybe somewhere in there.
And what we're trying to do is we're trying to bracket and open the door for what we believe to be a pretty close number. Now, admittedly, sometimes we'll take our number and we'll open it up. But this is one of those things that there could be a flat number, and then there might be a tad more. Because once we determine it's the right rear, then we have to lift up, take the tire off, and inspect the physical condition of that wheel sensor.
Sure.
So, anyway, I'm 85% sure you have a bad wheel sensor, but it won't do you any good to go replace them, okay?
Okay. Because if the ABS light comes on, plus the red brake light, but that just means I don't have ABS. Which I'm not living in Colorado on snow where it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Your ABS light is red, right?
No, the ABS light is yellow, but the red brake light also comes on.
Okay. Yellow means caution. And because that wheel sensor is not talking, the ABS, when you apply the brakes real fast and you're in a collision, as you apply the brakes, the computer better see all four tires stop rotating.
Mm-hmm.
So it can't trust that right rear. So that's the answer.
Okay. May I ask another question?
Go ahead.
I've got a, I helped a friend, a woman, buy a Windstar because I'd like them. But she has now had it happen twice where her brakes go, her pedal goes to the floor. She's had it into her mechanic, and fluid's full. There's no leaks, something like that. That's a dangerous deal.
Yeah, I'm thinking one of the things that I would want her to do, if it's safe, or you can ask her this already, if she follows the pedal to the floor, does the brake light come on? Now, most people won't follow it to the floor. They'll sit there and pump it and stuff. But in certain conditions, that's the question. I don't think it's a fluid problem. I think it's a pressure problem.
Does the pedal ever come back? Like if when she presses it and it's not.
Yeah, and the mechanic, she said she had it in the mechanic, checked everything, couldn't find anything wrong, and it just did it intermittently on her twice now. I mean, that's pretty scary when she's on the highway.
Okay, so I'm going to change your question. What guess should I make, Mark? I'm guessing the master cylinder. Yeah. I think 70% of those kinds of symptoms, they ultimately, now, in his defense, if it's not happening, he can't find it. In his defense.
Yeah. He can't be 100% on he could probably guess just like anybody else, but he can't be 100% sure. that's going to fix it because he hasn't been able to duplicate himself and see exactly what's happening.
To follow that up, it's the guess is the best, but if she said, sometimes it goes to the floor and I don't get a red brake light, but the other day I was doing this and I was in clear traffic. I was on my way to church on the back roads and I went to hit the pedal and I knew it was going to go and I followed it all the way to the floor and the red brake light came on. That's a master cylinder.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Third question on these, since we're talking about turning in a circle, I've never been able to get my compass to correct itself. It's only about 180 degrees off, by circling around in the parking lots and things like that.
You mean left and right is different arc?
No, the compass, the compass on the dashboard.
Oh.
North, south, east, west.
Okay.
And to reset it, but it's 180 degrees off. And I followed the manual, driven around in the circles like it says slowly. There's a circle to go to a setting.
Yeah.
This not is not a huge deal.
I've seen this before, and I made the mistake of thinking that I could read and do everything. And what ultimately happened is my wife sat next to me, and she told me exactly what to do, and it fixed it. So I was obviously not doing the procedure exactly right. So we decided that, as most of my life is, she tells me what to do and I do it. And in that case, we figured it out.
Well, my wife's similar to that too, and I often find myself not reading directions, and then I read them through the third time. I go, "Oh, I missed that first two times."
The other day, I had the same issue. I was working on the motorhome, and I couldn't figure out why this particular circuit was dead. Well, it's dead because the activation button is not on. So, if I turn the cruise control on, then I got cruise. But if I don't turn the cruise control on, I can push the set button until, we're all dead, and it's not going to set the cruise. So, all righty. Well, thank you, Tom.
Okay. Let's go. Hey, thank you so much for your show. You're informative to a lot of
people. You're welcome. Okay. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Larry Harker's Auto Repairs at 38th Avenue in Indian School. What's special about them? Well, they've been there a very long time, since 1967. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto. Bob's in the shop, Ellen's at the front counter. But they also have Jeremy. Jeremy is a master tech. He might as well have a doctorate degree in every single aspect of a car. The mechanical, the transmission, the paint and body, the air conditioning, the tires, school buses, big trucks. He has passed every test they have. He's one of perhaps four people in the United States that have done that. So if you've got a diagnostic problem or you just need an oil change and you live near 38th Avenue and Indian School, I would think that you want to try them, Larry Harker's Auto. And we got a caller, Gil.
That would be Steve.
Steve, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Well, I'm pretty good, Andy.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's good. At least you're hanging out with your dad. That's good.
Yes.
It's punishment.
For who? Yeah.
For her.
Okay. Two oil-related questions. I've always changed the oil on my cars every 5,000 miles. Just get the odometer on a 5,000-mile setting and, 5, 10, 15, 20. Mm-hmm. Very easy to remember. And I've never had any issues over the decades, but right now I'm using Mobil 1, which is supposedly 15,000-mile oil. I'm still changing it at 5,000 miles. I'm just curious, if I were to up that 10,000 miles, is there any downside to that? Is there any filter limitation that the filter would be, become clogged up the longer intervals, or should everything be good to go on 10,000-mile intervals?
I would say he would be fine at 10,000. I think it's actually a waste of your money if you're changing it at 5.
And I yeah. agree. No on the filter question. No on the filter question.
Yeah.
You've been spoiling it with 5,000. Let me ask you this. How often or how many miles a year are you driving?
Depending on whether it's my wife's right, usually 12,000 to 15,000 miles a year.
We've got lots. We're close to Ahwatukee. We're on Warner and I-10. We have lots of people in Ahwatukee that drive 3,000 miles a year, 2,000 miles a year.
Right.
And it's really hard to put them. Conventional oil is 3 to 5, change interval. A blended oil, half synthetic, or I'll say a synthetic blend, is 5 to 7,500. And then you got the sins that go from 7,500 to 12,000, depending on what brand you're buying. We try to tailor it for the person. In your case, my advice would be change it in April once a year. Let's go through the summer with fresh oil. Change it in April once a year. You're not going past the 10, 12, 15 mark. Mobil 1 is a fine product, and that's what I would do if I were you. And then the money you save, my address is 1025.
I would say definitely do the 10,000-mile intervals. Don't 5,000 is just a waste.
And, like, right now her car is up on it, and I'll check it, just taking a visual at the oil. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, at 10,000 miles, will I see a noticeably different oil than I would expect to see at 5,000?
No, I don't think you would.
No, not at all. Here's the deal. The oil is going to change colors, but that has never been some portion of our thought process today. In the 70s, yeah, we sold lots of oil changes because it's dirty. But really and truly, the oil is supposed to pick up trash, hold it in suspension until the next time that train goes through the filter. So that's the whole idea. And now, the oil can't be half gas, and the oil can't be white and foamy because that's water. But obviously, I'd like to be your garage and do your synthetic oil changes every 5,000 miles. But really and truly, we're giving you the best advice we can.
Next question, real quickly, since you mentioned motorhomes, which is my second question.
Okay.
The motor, like the one we have now, is an 8.3 Cummins pusher. And the guy that I bought it from recently had been changing the oil once a year, about every 7,500 miles. What is more critical in that? Does the oil deteriorate, particularly in a diesel, when it's sitting in the crankcase and not being driven?
No. No, the answer is no. I'm going to take a break. You stay right there. Okay? They're yelling at me right now. For the rest of you, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Andy Salem, and the two of us work at SalemBoysAuto.com. Oh, no, we don't do there, but Salem Boys Auto in Tempe. And you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. It's not about my shop. It's about your car issues. So let me tell you real quick about Action Auto at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since early 1983. The guys I know are still in business. The guys that don't play by the rules are not in business. There's lots more that are not in business, that are in business, especially when you start talking about guys that started in the early 80s. So he's I-17 in Deer Valley. The northwest corner is where he sits. And if you have a shop and you'd like to try them, go ahead. If you don't have a shop and you're in that geographical area, stop by for an oil change and see how you like them. Let's go back. And I think we're going to Steve. Steve, you talked about an 8.3 Cummins.
Yeah, and actually I misspoke earlier. The previous owner had asked 22,000 miles on it, but he had had the oil changed every 5,000 miles.
Okay.
In the 8.3 since the time it was new.
Okay.
He had it changed about 15 months ago. I bought it, and it has about 2,000 miles on the oil change. Just curious whether there's, I mean, any, like I said, degradation that happens to diesel if it's, not if it's just been changed and allowed to sit, but changed, run, and
okay.
then allowed to sit for some period of time.
The answer is no. Here's the real answer. It really depends on what weight oil he was using. If he was using a 1540, that's good for 7,500 to 8,000 miles. And let me also tell you, I've had two motorhomes with an 8.3. I am real familiar with that dog. So the second issue is if he's using a 540, he can go 10 to 15. So the difference between the 1540 and the 540, the 1540 is a semi-blend, half conventional. Well, it could be 70-30, it could be 60-40, but it's conventional and a synthetic. So that's what the 1540 is. The 540, straight synthetic. So pick which one you want. But in my motorhome, I just change it once a year.
Yeah, it doesn't. It says he's using Shell GA oil.
Yeah, I don't.
No, that's the filter. But anyhow, yeah, I'll switch it over to probably Rotella synthetic.
You can do that. You can do Delo.
I mean, too, I think it depends on how much are you using it.
Because
if, you know, it doesn't really make sense to use a full synthetic, right? If he's not using it much and then going to change it once a year.
You've got a good point.
That's the question. Does it have to be changed once a year?
Well, how many miles a year are you driving it?
We'll probably put, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 miles a year on it.
Yeah, I do it once a year. Here's why. Real quick, here's why. Every time you start up an engine and you shut it off, we're going through a heat cycle. As the engine cools down, the moisture in it turns from a vapor to a liquid. So now we've got droplets of oil in your water in your oil. That's why heat cycles are so important. In your case, your heat cycles are going to be few and far between. So I want you to change it on an annual basis because I know there's going to be a certain amount of moisture in the oil. Now, if you were to go across country with your wife or your girlfriend, whatever, and you go, you know, drive and you drive all day long and shut it off, all day long and shut it off, then you're doing heat cycles and boom, we're done. Keep in mind, too, that water boils at 212. So once we get the engine temperature up and we get north of 212, the water turns to a vapor and the system sucks it out of the motor, sends it out the tailpipe. And the color of diesel oil means nothing.
So, yeah.
Very good.
I mean.
Yeah.
I would say he would be better off just doing a semi-synthetic and do it once a year, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
It would be a considerable savings on that engine.
So you could do that. Now, let me tell you, there's only four manufacturers of oil in the United States. Chevron, Exxon, Mobil, Phillips 66. And there might be one more. But anyway, you can buy all the fancy oil you want. If I were you, I'd just buy the cheapest 1540 I could find. The name doesn't mean anything. They all pass the same standards. So that's what I used to do. But we have 600 gallons sometimes of a synthetic oil. So obviously I'm going to pay less than you're going to pay. So I still used a 1540 in my 8.3. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you
very much.
You bet. Okay. I want to take a minute and we're going to do this over two periods or two segments.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of times over the last month,
mm-hmm.
we've had friends of mine come in.
Mm-hmm.
And Larry came in, and we're not disparaging dealers, independent shops, chain stores, or anybody in the auto repair industry. But Larry comes in, and he says, well, first he calls me, and he says, I got this huge bill of $3,000 for my car when I took it in for an oil change. And I said, okay, what is it? He said, the transmission is leaking, and they want like $2,200 to fix the oil leak. Do you see anything on the ground? No. Do you see anything on the tailgate or the rear bumper? I ask that because as oil leaks, it goes to the back of the car as you drive, and then it swirls, so the back bumper and the tailgate will have oil spots on them. No. Are you sure? Yes. Have you added any transmission fluid? No. Whew. What's the other one? The brake fluid's black, and they want to flush the ABS system in the brake. Okay, what does it look like? He said it's not black. I said, you know what? Just take it over to the shop. Now, Larry was married to one of my sisters. God bless him for doing that. But what are you rolling your eyes for? Huh?
He's in the same boat as mom.
Oh, his mom. Okay. So anyway.
Bless their heart.
Yes. So he brings it in. This is a true story. And there's another story after this break. They lift it up in the air. Now, by the way, he has pictures of his transmissions and pictures of his master cylinder. So Eddie lifts it up in the air and he holds the picture up and he turns to Larry and he goes, "This ain't your transmission. This ain't your transmission. This isn't even your car." So Eddie underneath it, he says, "There's no leaks at all. There's no trail of oil from the transmission backwards. There's nothing on the rear bumper. There's nothing on the rear hatch. Nothing. There is no indication this thing's been leaking oil." He drops it down. He opens up the hood and this is what he said. "The brake fluid couldn't be more amber than it is." He says, "There's nothing wrong with the brake fluid." So, sent him on his way, and that was it. Now, on the other side of this break, I'm going to explain another one that was even worse than that one.
1 minute.
And there's a purpose on this, because I want to talk about this, about second opinions. That's how important it is get a second opinion. You do when you have a patio built. You do when you do a kitchen remodel. You do when you spend big money. But there is a lot of money to spend.
Yeah, or even if you're just not in a comfort zone, if you're just, you know, I mean, it could be a $200 repair, you know, and you're just not comfortable or what have you. That's always a good idea.
I think Larry, the kick was, is he didn't have any drops on the floor.
Yeah, and sometimes we do see quite often that people say that, and then they have a splash shield that covers the entire undercarriage of the engine. So there is a leak, but they're not seeing it on the ground because the undercarriage is catching it. So we have seen that before. So, I mean, but if you have low fluid, then you know that there is a leak, and even you could be not seeing it on the ground.
So stick around, because we're going to come back right after this. Well, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Mark Salem sitting here with Andy Salem, my daughter. She actually runs our company. She actually bosses me around every once in a while. But if I just want to hide from her, I go in the men's restroom, and she's not allowed in there. Ha, ha, ha. What was that?
I said, ha, ha.
Okay. Nevertheless, when we talk about good auto repair shops, we have to talk about Thompson's. Thompson's has been around for a very long time, since 1970. And both Brian and Thelma have come from gas station families that go back to the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s. So those young people have had an opportunity to sit at dinner and listen to their mom and dad talk about the repair business and the selling of gas. So Thompson's is a good shop. If you're in the Mesa area, it's the only shop I can recommend to you. It's not the only shop in Mesa. It's the only one I feel comfortable in telling you to go see them. So Thompson's is on Main Street, just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. Brian and Thelma, you'll talk to one or the other. Let me talk about real quick about another case we had with respect to a car repair.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a little different because this was a lot worse. So the gentleman had taken his Jeep truck in for maintenance, and he got a laundry list of things mm-hmm. that he needed on his car. A transmission service, transfer case service, front control arm, sway bar bushings, front and rear differential, replace the tires, replace the shocks, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So he asked for a second opinion, and we brought it in. And we did the work we felt was needed.
Mm-hmm.
We also told him of the work that we didn't want to do for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, so, and work that wasn't to the intervals or didn't need to be done now, but maybe need to be done in the next 10,000 miles.
So, for instance, you might have had a stopping point of 130,000 miles for a particular fluid change,
mm-hmm.
and he's sitting there at 100 or 98.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't need to do it till the 128,000.
Yeah.
Okay, at the end of the day, I have to read his email to me.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, this is a friend of mine. He's in the legal arena. And he's very principled. So he says to me, "Mark, I'm sorry I missed you today. The work on the Jeep is complete. I couldn't be happier. I got the items addressed plus a new set of tires and shocks and still saved $2,200 compared to the other places," quote. So we didn't do everything they wanted us to do, but we did everything that needed to be done, and we saved them $2,200.
Mm-hmm.
That's substantial.
Yeah.
There's a lot of shops in town that can do what we do.
Yeah.
But there is a time when you have to get a second opinion. We're going to talk more about that in the next segment. But we're going to go to, like we said, to Bob. Bob, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
So recently I took my son's 2014 GMC in for the 100,000-mile service.
Okay.
And one of the things was the coolant. So they flushed and replaced the coolant.
Okay.
And when it was done, I asked them, did they use Dexcool? Because it had the gold Dexcool, you know, coolant in it.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, we don't use Dexcool, but we use a universal coolant that's gold in color. So you think I should be concerned?
No.
No.
Mm-mm. No, not at all. Let me explain. All the coolants have different colors, and there's lots of universals. It's not possible for me to carry 9 different colors in my parts room. I mean, that would take up a substantial amount of shelf space. So we would have put the amber in because that's exactly what we took out. So I find no fault in that, and I don't think you should be concerned about that at all, because I would do the same if it was my mother's car. Yeah, I'd do the same if it was some family member's car. I'd use the amber universal.
So you think Dexcool, you used to hear it called Deathcool and stuff, you know, that it gelled up and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Has that all been taken care of now?
It has to do with heat cycles. Yeah, it's going to gel on you at times. But here's the deal. You take the cap off and you have a little gel on the bottom of the cap. Nobody really cared about that. Probably what happens is some of the particles that make up Dexcool are lighter than some of the other chemicals of Dexcool, so they're going to rise to the top. So we had a little bit of jello on the cap, really. Who cares?
Yeah, I don't think it's a big deal. We did have a customer come in this week that actually switched it out to the universal because of that.
And there is a price difference.
Yeah, and it wasn't significant, but he didn't, you know, the gelling issue was
1 minute
a bothersome to him, so we switched it out. But I don't think they did that. You know, switching it out. I don't think it was a negative for you and a positive for the shop. I think, you know.
Unless they charged him Dex dollars and installed Universal. There is a slight difference in price between the two of them.
Yeah, it's not going to be probably.
Yeah. Hoat and Oat, H-O-A-T and O-A-T. Those are the basic kind of coolants, and there's a couple of weirdos way out in Never Never Land, like the blue. I think it's BMW or something like that. But the Universals cover about 75-80% of the cars, and a lot of us are pouring Universals. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
You betcha. You betcha. We have that happen in oil filters, air filters, wiper blades, spark plugs, brake shoes. We have a variety of things, and there are lots of wives' tales out there about different manufacturers of brakes and belts and hoses.
Some of them are. There's some validity to a small few of them, but the majority of them are just, you're fine.
When we come back, you're going to explain that comment. You don't have to be word specific or brand specific, but you can explain that comment.
Well, I mean, I think that there's sometimes that you favor you know a different brand or you see certain idiosyncrasies or what I mean, certain issues with one brand or a brand of, not necessarily brake pads, but, you know.
Okay, let me give you an example that you're searching for. Spark plugs. You got the ones with 3 sparks, 4 sparks, 20 sparks. Then you got Champion. Mm-hmm. And then you got NGK. And what are some other ones that we sell? The high-end ones, the Platinums and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Those are the difference.
Yeah.
If you put the one that's real hot and has 3 sparks, it's 1 spark divided by 3. And we would never put that spark plug in any customers of ours unless we didn't want them back. We'd put them in there. We'd put them in. I'm making fun of that, but it's the, and she's right. There's lots of no name brake shoes that we wouldn't use, and there's belts and hoses that with a name that we are not familiar with, we wouldn't use. So yes, there is a difference, but I want to put you in a comfort zone. What you had done was certainly acceptable to me. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Andy. She's been involved in our company since she was 10 years old with pigtails. Was that what
yeah,
it is?
Yeah, a lot longer than that.
A lot. She's been around 20, 25 years more?
Yeah. Probably.
Okay. And now she actually handles the money, handles the staff, and she's done a really good job, and we're really, really proud of her. But I'm also proud of some other people, and that's Auto Dynamics in Sun City. They're a really good shop. Chuck started it, but Derek runs it now. It's family-owned and operated since 1982. They do really good work. Their staff and their mechanics and their parts people are looking after the customer and not themselves. So if you're in Sun City and you don't have a repair shop, I'd like to recommend Auto Dynamics, the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Okay. Let's talk about what we were talking about for the last week and a half. Mm-hmm. Folks, we're going to do something different. There are a lot of you out there that would like a second opinion, but you don't really know how to get it. Now, there's no sense in getting a second opinion of anything that's short of $100, $200, $300. There's not going to be a big movement. But there is going to be on those ones that are big. So from, I don't, you can come in whatever you want. But from $500 north of that, there's going to be a big difference. And here's what bothers me the most. Andy, you can figure out what bothers you the most. We get a lot of estimates that don't include sales tax, environmental charges, and shop supplies. And in reality, sales tax, shop supplies, and environmental charges at my shop is 15%. So it's really important for you to know that, because if you have a $500 bill and there's 15%, there's going to be $65 worth of taxes on it. And if they don't include that, it sure makes their estimate look a lot better than anybody else's. So for us, we've been in business since 1974. And for us...
79. You're married in 74.
Oh, that's right. Shut up about that.
At least you know that.
Yeah, great. Anyway, we have always given a write your check before you get here kind of estimate. Our software allows us to do that, and so does theirs. So it's not because we're better than everybody else. We're going to offer you this for free. Here's the 1, 2, 3. You have to have the estimate in writing. You have to have the car that the estimate has been written on. You have to call Andy and make an appointment. Then you bring your car in. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to drag your butt out into the bay after we've inspected it. And we're going to say, we agree with this. We don't agree with this. We don't agree with this, but all three of these we agree with. Then we're going to give you an estimate. You hold your papers close to you. We're going to give you an estimate. You're going to leave. Cost you nothing. Costs you nothing. We're not sitting here telling everybody that we're the very best, but we do have standards that have been developed since 1979 or 1980. So we've been around, and I have surveyed shops all my car life. And I ask them, what's your sales tax and what's your labor rate and why are you there and do you have a stepped labor rate? Because right now, there's lots of shops that went to a really low labor rate, 108. What are we at now? 125?
Mm-hmm.
So they're 108. So if we give you an estimate and you say, what's your labor rate? And we say 125. And they said 108. You're going to go there. Here's the bad news. The next labor rate of the two or three shops that I talked to about this is 150 to 164 for the second and subsequent hours. And you're not likely to know that. So that's what's going on right now in our industry. Not to mention that there's a lot of, the auto repair industry is down a lot, a lot. I talked to a shop owner the other day that had three cars in a day, and he usually does 10 to 12 a day, and he had three cars. I talked to another shop owner who said his whole week was $3,800. And most of us independent shops, a whole week might be what?
No, I think that varies so much.
Give me the parameters, as little as and as high as.
I mean, I maybe as low as 10 to 15,000.
Okay.
And maybe as high as...
Some of the guys are talking 9 to 10,000 a week
yeah.
in sales.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. And then I would say, I mean, I don't know how many shops do more than $10,000 a day, but maybe $50,000 or something like that.
Well, I was talking weekly because it was easier for them to average in a bad day. Yeah. But you have to have the bays to do that. So you're not going to be able to pop a $10,000 day with two bays.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
For instance, the guy that had the $3,800 week, he has 12 bays and he has 6 technicians, 1 service writer and 1 service manager. He's got a lot of people he sent home that day, those days, because he can't afford them.
Well, and I think it's important for people to know because just with everything that's going on, I know for our shop, our technicians use gloves every time they get into the car. They're using seat covers. They're using floor mats at the front counter. We're trying to, limit people waiting or not have people waiting using the night drop, things like that. So, if you're uncomfortable and you're not going in for service because of that, maybe just ask the shop what they're doing to kind of comply with everything that's going on to maybe put you in a comfort zone. Because, a lot of businesses that are in our industry are family owned and operated, and
Mom just ordered 300 masks she found on Amazon.
Oh, okay.
The ones that are blue that wrap around your ears. Mm-hmm. So we're going to put our customers in those. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep the customer 5-6 feet away from everybody in the shop. The customer has to go out into the shop. They should put their hands in their pockets. We're going to say, you were told you needed tires and these tires look good, or I agree and here's our estimate. So there's going to be a give and take. We're working really hard. I think you're having the entire shop clean twice a week.
Yeah, and I do that normally, but then every day I'm cleaning it. Or if anyone comes in and waits, then I clean after they leave and things like that.
Now when we're gunning their head with the temperature gun.
Yeah.
A lot of them don't like that. They don't know if you're holding
we're
a gun with a bullet.
That.
Okay, well, wait a minute. 98.6 is the normal.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying over 100 is what they're kicking people out of the airlines for.
Mm-hmm.
Over 100. So we're talking about a discernible difference. So if we start gunning our technicians on the head, like they do on the airports.
Okay, the technicians. I thought you were talking about customers. I'm like,
okay.
Yeah.
No, our staff.
Oh, yeah.
All the staff comes in, and we have those temperature guns. Hell, we give them away.
Yeah.
So we give them away to people who buy full sets of tires, and we explain to them how to use the temperature gun to determine if they're going to have a tire problem.
Yeah, mostly on big trucks and motorhomes. Yeah.
But we can also teach you how to fillet your steaks or fly cut your steaks, and you can get rare, medium, well, and well.
Mark's not teaching you that, but
we have it on.
Eddie will.
Mark hasn't cooked anything except a can of Campbell's
Alan
soup.
Alan and Mark barely know how to use a microwave. Let's be real.
So the bottom line is...
They have really good wives. Oh,
are you done?
No.
Okay. Go ahead. I'll give you the time you need.
No, it's okay.
Okay. And yes, Alan and Mark, my son, neither one of us knows how to cook, and neither one of us cares to know how to cook, because if our wives aren't interested, then we'll go to McDonald's or we'll go to Taco Bell, or if they want really healthy food, we'll go to the Jimmy John's or Subway.
So, and there you know it, folks. That's the healthy food.
Right. So at the end of the day, you're going to make an appointment. You're going to bring your car and the written estimate. It doesn't do any good for a verbal. We're not going to do verbals. We need paperwork.
Yeah.
And so you're going to come. We're going to put, if hopefully the mask comes in, we're going to give you a mask. We're going to keep you away from our staff. I think we have one service writer writing right now, right?
No, both of them are.
Both of them are writing. So we're going to try to keep you away from us. We need to protect you, and we need to protect us. So that's kind of how this whole process works.
So, yeah, you can call or email me.
Okay.
And then I can set them up.
What's your email address?
Andy, A-N-D-I, at SalemBoysAuto.com.
Andy at SalemBoysAuto.com. You can do either one. It's free, folks. It's free. Now, obviously, a $60 estimate may not be a big deal. But like these two guys that we just explained, it was multi-thousands of dollars. We saved, one guy saved $2,200 under the other estimate he had. So we had done virtually all they wanted to do. And it was 22. Now, there was a couple fluid changes we didn't do because they weren't due by the owner's manual.
Yeah.
And the fluid looked fine.
And that's kind of I think that we do a pretty good job of explaining that kind of stuff. Or, you know, if there's something more pressing than a fluid service, we can tell you, hey, if it were our vehicle, we would address, you know, your tires first. Obviously, your fluids aren't going to leave you stranded, but this is something that you need to plan for in the next 5 to 10,000 miles, that kind of a thing.
And we're really interested in it's okay for you to say, Andy, what would you do if this was your car? Or you could say, Andy, do you love your husband? Yes. What would you do if it was his car? Because if Andy said no, or any of the people in here said no, I hate my wife. You don't want him. You don't want him. Of course, he wouldn't say that, but I'm making a joke. The idea is that the best question is if this was your car or this is your mother or father's car, what would you tell them? And that really is the heart of the question is, yeah. Is what would you do under the circumstances I find myself in?
Sure.
So, and looking over the ticket right now, the transmission fluid, this thing had 117,000 miles. The transmission fluid was due at 120. The fluid is full and looks fine. It's $385. The customer said, I'd rather just go up to the 120 or so.
Yeah.
So that was his choice, but he wasn't in any danger.
No.
He had 3,000 miles based on the warranty or on the owner's manual. He didn't really care.
Yeah.
So he didn't know that he was going to be 2,200 under the first estimate. He probably didn't know that at the time. He probably will come back for that.
Yeah, and there's so many different. That's why it's good to see the estimate that you've been provided, because number one, there's a lot of misinformation, and then we know we're comparing apples to apples, and maybe there's something that they didn't see that we see, or what they recommended, we don't, you know, agree with the severity of it, or we feel it's more of a maintenance thing, that kind of a thing. So,
and there's lots of that. There's parts. Don't count on parts being a big deal, but they are a percentage of the whole bill. The labor rate, that's a big percentage of the whole bill. Shop supplies, environmental charges, a big percentage. But it has to do really with, hopefully, and we're not the only people in town that are honest. And in addition to that, we're going to have cars where their estimate is more than ours. And that's okay. You go with comfort to know that your estimate has been looked at by some professional people, and they said, they raised their right hand and they slapped the work order and they said, this is a good deal. Because our focus is you. It has nothing to do with you, you know, doing business here. But again, free. We're going to do an inspection on your car focused on the estimates you've received, and then we're going to put numbers to it and hand you that document. And you can do whatever you want to do, but we're not charging you. So if you want to do that, Andy, A-N-D-I, at SalemBoysAuto.com, Andy at SalemBoysAuto.com. She'll make your appointment. Obviously, Monday mornings and Friday afternoons are kind of tough on us because we're delivering a lot of cars during that period of time. But any other time, she'll make an appointment, and you should plan on what? 30, 35 minutes, 40 minutes?
No, it usually takes at least an hour.
To go from start to finish?
Yeah, at least.
Okay, so we'll talk 45 seconds to a minute and a half, something, or 45 minutes to a minute and a half. We'll give them a bracket.
Yeah, it depends on what we're looking at, and, you know, but yeah.
And then we're going to have our parts department involved because he's going to price the parts. So the technician has to price the labor, and it has to be right. And the parts department provides the number on the parts based on parameters that the family gave him. So he's not allowed to just do wild cards. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You're welcome to call in. 602-508-0960. And she is flying wing with me today, and she actually runs the operation, our operation. Her responsibility is from the ceiling to the floor and everything in between. She handles all the technicians, the front counter, the service riders. She handles payroll, which I think is the most powerful position that anybody can have is whoever does payroll. And she handles all the vendors, and she handles everybody. Although you don't really deal with all of those, because we have people that can also deal with them.
Sure.
But if it gets above the level of some discussion about pricing or some discussion about some warranty, then Andy's involved. Anyway, I'll tell you, a great shop is Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. They're at I-7. They're actually south of I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Been around a very long time. They sell parts 24 hours a day on their website, and they really have a nice discussion about the benefit of this part or what the part does or what the part doesn't do. So if you're a diesel guy and you're looking for some hot rod stuff, then Strictly Diesel would be a good place you'd stop by their website. They're diehard service repair and parts, and they do foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. They'll also do your car because they realize that a guy can have a diesel car, but his wife can have a Acura. And so they thought, well, we'll just do a little bit of maintenance on the car so that we can make it easy for our customers. So while it says Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, Nate says, talk to us about the cars that you have in your family, and we'll let you know if we're the best shop for that. Kevin, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. Good morning, Mark. I have a 1999 Grand Caravan. I need a good transmission shop that I can go in and have a good estimate that I can trust.
You know, I would call Automatic Transmission Exchange. Automatic Transmission Exchange on Washington. He's one of my best car repair shops list. Let me tell you what's going on. Yeah. In the transmission industry, we've gone on a 1 to 10 scale with sophistication. We've gone from the 70s when everything was a 3 on a 1 to 10 scale to a transmission today that's all electronically controlled, and on a 1 to 10 scale, it's a 30. So not everybody can fix them. Not everybody can rebuild them. The two facilities that service us are wholesale only. What they're saying in a nice way is we don't want to deal with the customer.
Mm-hmm.
So send us the car and stuff like that. What symptoms do you have?
I can stop at a light, or when I stop the brakes, the car will sometimes it actually shut off, but it like jerks ahead. And I have trouble when I'm starting to take off. The shifting, I thought it was those little, I don't know if you call them speed sensors, that are down. Because I had that replaced once before, and things were great. I'm at the mechanic. I want to have somebody look at it.
Okay. I want you to manually shift the car, okay? I want you to manually shift it when you come to a stop. Put it in the lowest gear you got, and then you're going to go, and then manually shift it. The symptoms you describe could easily be an engine problem.
Mm-hmm.
They could easily be locking up the torque converter, and that's like trying to stop a four-speed transmission without pushing in the clutch. And then it could give you a jerking feeling as you accelerate through. So do you have a general repair shop?
Yeah, I do, but it's out in Chandler, and I live up on Bethany Home in like 27th Avenue.
Okay, here's my thought is I think you should have somebody drive it with you before you, because I don't want you to wait. How many miles are on the caravan?
Oh, about 150,000. It's okay. 17, no, it's 20 years old.
Okay,
sure.
But it's not like 300,000 or nothing. It's like maybe 175.
Okay. I'm telling you, it is my personal opinion that most automatic transmissions are going to need major work between 100 and 200,000 miles. Keep in mind, 200,000 miles is eight times around the girth of the Earth, eight times around the equator.
Mm-hmm.
People lose sight of what that mileage means, but I would have somebody else. Who we got up on Bethany Home Road? Bethany and what?
I-17, roughly, in Bethany.
Okay. Well, Kurtz is at Bell, and Action Auto is at Deer Valley. I know that either one of those guys could drive your car, and there's a 50-50 chance there won't be a bill as long as you don't take their technician for an hour.
Right, that's fine.
So, yeah, and just have them, because there's a lot of times that people come in that think they're transmission issues and it's engine issues or vice versa, so just have them nail down what it is.
That's the question.
They just had the brain replace the computer, and when they did that, they did my transmission, changed the filter and new oil and everything. They said they didn't see any chunks of metal or anything major in it. The transmission oil was fairly clean.
Okay. And why did they replace the transmission controller? Why did they replace the transmission brain? PCM.
Well, they did the filter, and I wanted them to change the filter and the fluid just to, the age of the van.
All righty. Okay, well, I agree with Andy. I'm going to jump out and say 50% of the time it's an engine problem and 50% of the time it's a transmission problem. So I think the odds are, I think you'll benefit from having somebody just drive it themselves. 10-4.
Okay. What was the one on Bell Road again?
Kurtz Automotive on the northeast corner of Bell and I-17.
Okay.
Kurtz. And tell him you've got a coupon from Mark Salem for $150, but he hasn't mailed it to you yet. He'll laugh.
Okay.
He'll laugh.
Right.
So mm-hmm. He'll laugh. Or you can say to him to Kurt, Mark says he has a picture with you at a particular club where they serve liquor. And if it's true, then I need a discount. And if it's not, then I'll slap Mark next time I see him.
So next time you're telling me I should try to bribe him a little here.
Blackmail. It's blackmail.
Blackmail, right? Blackmail.
That's right. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Kevin.
Well, thank you very much for the information.
No problem.
Okay, you have a great show.
Thank you.
All right,
thank you very much. All right. We'll talk about somebody else up there in the north side of town. He handles the northeast Scottsdale area all the way from Kansas City, all the way to the west side to Central, and all the way out to Fountain Hills. Is Blackwell Automotive. Mm-hmm. Tom's been a friend of mine, and we're both cut from the same cloth. Shut up, Andy.
Yeah, exactly.
We're both the same kinds of people. We know right from wrong. Our technicians aren't going to spread manure out and tell us this is the way it is when we know different. Both of us have got 30, 40 years of working on cars. So we know what a good tech is. We know what he smells like. We know how he talks. And it's not a good idea to try to change our mind that you're better than the next guy. So Blackwell Auto, he's at 40th and Greenway. He does a really good job. He's an independent, family-owned general repair shop. I'm looking at, and he has ASE certified technicians. So if you're up there near 40th and Greenway, then you don't have a shop, then Blackwell Automotive might not be a bad idea. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We got a call or an email, mm-hmm. and he says, now people have top post batteries. Mm-hmm. This is top post, not side post. And they do make these felt washers for the side post, but are the felt battery rings they push on when they buy a new battery really necessary?
Mm-hmm.
As the felt?
They push on you to buy. When you buy,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, they actually do push them onto the 5/16 3/8 bolt that goes into your battery. So
but
they push you to buy.
Yeah, they push you to buy.
Well, they're corrosion inhibitors, and they inhibit the corrosion. Well, of course, if there's corrosion around the battery terminal, then it's leaking acid, and that's a defective battery. They're also very lucrative. They might cost. I'm making an example here. Don't correct me. They might cost us 5 cents, and we sell them for a dollar, and that's pretty good markup. I don't know what they are, but change the question, Keith. Mark, do you sell the little felt anti-corrosion pads? No.
No.
Do you have them in the parts department?
No.
No. Do you have them on your old car?
No.
Does Andy have them on her car?
No.
Okay, so that's the way it is. I don't know. There's a high percentage. We don't eat percentage points. We eat dollars. I mean, that's what feeds the family is dollars, not percentage points.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's not something we use or sell or we feel is needed, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We don't feel that it's needed. So Kevin, or Keith, that is, then that's what we feel like. And certainly you're welcome to do that yourself. If that's what you want to do.
Yeah, and those are good. So if there's ever a time where people don't want to call in but they have questions that they want answered, I think we answer them via email, but it's nice to get those every once in a while, too, just and we can read them on the show because maybe other people have those questions and things like that.
Speaking of that, the lines are wide open. There's five of them, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil, did I hear the gun?
Oh, no, not yet.
Oh, okay. All right. Gil gives me an air gun noise. Gil, can they hear the air gun noise? There you go, buddy. That's what we want to hear. And that brings my attention to
10 minutes.
And I'm thinking, actually, as we're sitting here in the radio studio at the shop, when I hear the gun the first time, I'm thinking somebody's down in the shop
working. Yeah.
So I'm going to shut the door because we're kind of soundproof in
here.
So we were talking a little while ago. You got an estimate. It's a big estimate. You can call Andy, and we're going to make an appointment for you. And you have to be here, and you have to have the original estimate, and you're going to go in the shop.
We may, you know, be a little bit looser on your strict guidelines
okay.
with everything that's going on.
No, you're right. She's talking about the coronavirus issue and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not going to make you go into the shop. But see, here's what happens. You go into the shop and they say the lower control arm bushings are bad. So we look at them and this is what it says. They're bad. It's got to be clunking when you take off or when you stop abruptly. Oh, yeah, it is. Okay, they're bad. The other shop is right.
1 minute.
On the other hand, we hear this a lot, and it drives me. It wads up my underwear something fierce. Cracked.
They can be cracked, but we want to see symptoms.
Weathered.
Yes, symptoms. It's a rubber component. We live in Arizona. We want to see symptoms and you know.
Visual. We got to see the bare.
Visual plus symptoms. Okay, then that warrants replacement. If you just have surface cracks then and you're not having any symptoms, don't spend the money. And lower control arms aren't cheap, so definitely don't spend the money.
We see words like weathered, checked, and bad. Those words aren't allowed in my shop. Everything is good or it's bad. Because if you're bad, it's good because your butt's gone. Everything is good or bad. There is no standing on the middle of the razor blade, teetering on both sides. What would you do if it was your mother's car? That's what it boils down to. Mm-hmm. So we know, our industry knows, that good and bad are the two words we should use. But weathered and cracked and feels bad and all that kind of stuff, that's just not what we're allowed to do in my industry. We're not allowed to use descriptive words that keep the Attorney General off our back because we're using words like weathered and cracked. Anyway, we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my daughter, Andy. And she kind of runs the operation. There's not really a lot I do. You're not making any noise.
No, you're very involved, but from afar.
Yeah, no, I am.
And not on the daily, you know, day-to-day stuff.
And I like to just go in at night and log on to the computer and kind of look around.
And snoop around.
And see which technician got this. And what this, 'cause see, we write on the remarks section everything. We write down who we talk to at the front counter and everything they say. So the customer comes in like that one gentleman and he's talking about a transmission issue and mm-hmm. it does this and it does that. And when it comes to a stop, it kind of chugs and shakes and stuff. I want to see that. And then I want to see the repair match that. Mm-hmm. I want to look at the repair. So if somebody comes in and remember that transmission guy, he come to a stop and the thing would shake and die. If somebody replaced the windshield wipers and then sold them rear brakes, I'm pretty sure they didn't fix that.
Sure.
So that's kind of what I look at from afar.
Yeah.
But you've been in this business a long time, so you know the craziness your dad does anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to transmissions, like we talked about, automatic transmission exchange has been around since 1968. I want you to close your eyes, Andy. In the 50s and the 60s for lunch, we had an oil barrel that was cut in half. And we'd put wood in there or cardboard boxes. And we'd sit around on 5-gallon cans that were empty of grease. And we'd sit around and we'd roast our hot dogs on the fire that was in this old oil can.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it started, is automatic transmission exchange.
Yeah.
They started it in 1968. They've been around a long time. And so if you need any transmission work, Monday mornings and Friday afternoons are kind of bad. But call ATE. Automatic Transmission Exchange around Washington and say, can I stop by and can someone go take a drive? I'd like to show them a problem I'm having. Automatic Transmission Exchange, who we got on the phone, Gil? Gil?
I'm back, Mark. Well,
who we got on the phone? Did I hear
no one. No, lines are open.
Did you hear the gun?
No, I didn't.
Oh, maybe I did.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, car repair, the success of the car repair is dependent on the customer.
Mm-hmm.
They have to give us something.
Yes.
We have to discuss the problem. They have to tell us it vibrates at 65 miles an hour.
Not when I'm braking.
Yeah, that's it. Not when I'm braking, but the vibration, is it the steering wheel or the seat of your pants?
Yes.
So there's questions, and there's three answers to every question. Yes, no, or I don't know. Now, sometimes if you've got an intermittent problem that only happens on Thursday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, chances are you may be told, and we said this too, you need to wait till it gets worse and easier to find. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to be valuable to you to have us drive it, and we're not going to have one of our technicians take your car home. That's something that is just, I've never liked that at all. So the idea is if you can describe the symptoms, and ladies, don't come in, don't let your husband tell you to come in and tell us what to do based on his knowledge. Please just give us the symptoms. Or call my husband and have a discussion with him, because that happens a lot. And I would say, with all due respect to the husbands, they're right about a third of the time, and two thirds of the time we're in a different planet. So the symptoms are so important. I turn my air conditioning on and there's a heck of a squeal. I turn the switch off and the squeal goes away. But in the mornings, it's worse, but in the afternoons, it's okay. So that tells us we got a clutch problem, and that tells us we got a compressor problem, that tells us the orifice tube is plugged up and we have uneven pressure. It tells us a lot of things, but that's the key, is communication.
And another thing we're seeing a lot, or we'll see a lot, you know, in the next couple of months, is people will call and just say, the AC doesn't work. Well, what does that mean? Does it mean it blows warm? Does it mean there's no, you know, volume of air? You have to differentiate the two, because it blowing, you know, having no volume of air, but the little volume of air that may be coming out that's cold is one thing. But if it's just blowing hot, but you have a good volume of air, that's another thing. Or if it's, you know, hot on one side and cold on the other in the car, on the passenger side, it's cold and the driver's side is warm. You know, all of those little things give us information to help diagnose your car faster and better.
You can't just come in and say, my air conditioning doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's not in your best interest. Please understand that it can cost you $150, $200 more for us to drive and find the problem than it would if you just said what Andy said. It just blows hot all the time. Or it blows cool on low, but on high it doesn't. Well, it's low on freon.
Yeah, or it's taking a long time to cool down the car, or it doesn't feel as cold as it used to feel, or, I mean, all that stuff is acceptable. It's just clarifying, you know, it just doesn't work. Doesn't work for us.
Yeah. No, that's right. But it's not in their best interest, because there's going to be a charge.
Yeah, and I just think that they, you know, they're not, don't have the knowledge that maybe we do, because that's what we do for a living. And so to them, it's just foreign. They don't know. So that's what they say. But it's our job to kind of ask them those questions to get the information out of them that we need so we can do our job correctly.
Here's the winner, though. Go to Harbor Freight and buy one of their little ice pick thermometers. And it comes in a red housing and black housing with a clip on it. So you clip it on a vent. And you start with low and you move through, and you only need to do low and high. And just tell us what the temperature is. Boy, I think our guys would jump over the counter and give you a hug. Well, maybe not your husband, but you. Because that's stuff we don't ever get. And that kind of information just saved you at least $50 to $75.
And after it's been running and you've been driving and not 2 seconds after you get into the car, because we all know, you know, it takes a while to cool down the car. But, too, if you called your shop and said, hey, I've got 65 degrees blowing out the center vent, you know, of my vehicle, it feels a little bit warm. Should I bring it in or should I not? You know, at 65 degrees, I would say, yes, let's definitely check it. But if you have somebody calls that says it's 50 degrees, I would probably say, don't worry about it. You know, that's kind of within the correct parameters that we like to see.
And another thing is, we have an electronic dipstick, our industry does now, that we never had before. You bring your car in, I think it's $129, $139, $149, I don't remember. But here's the deal. We suck out all your Freon. We look at the book, and your Freon holds 4 ounces. So we look at the book, and you only have 2.7 in it. So we clean up your 2.7, and then we put it back in your car, and we add 1.3. and then all of a sudden it's blowing ice cubes. So what we've done is we've put exactly the amount of Freon it has, it should have. And we've recycled yours, because we take yours out and then we clean it and we put it back in and we give you credit for that. So in reality, we're not charging you for all 4 ounces. The idea is that we're using some of yours and putting it back. So am I right? 129 to 149, something in that area?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on... That's, too, a hard thing when you call around and ask, because it really depends on how much Freon it needs.
And not only that is if they have the electronic dipstick, and if they're going to drain your system and not give you credit for what they took out, but they're going to put 4 ounces back in.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big difference there. 602-508-0960. That's the phone number you can call and talk to us. 602-508-0960. All five lines are open. Gil's answering. Andy and Mark will be back right after this. All righty. We're back on the air. Mark Salem and Andy Salem here. I've been in the business since 1979. She has to correct me.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy's been in the business for at least 20, 25 years. She started sweeping cigarette butts up on the parking lot when she was a sixth grader and morphed into, she's in the pilot seat. And suffice it to say that the technicians are polite to you.
Yes,
but
they are.
But they can still tease you.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff
yeah.
like that. But yeah. They understand. Okay, let's go to the phones. David, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I'm so glad you guys are on the radio.
Thank you.
About I've got a 2000 Wrangler. It's my wife's car. And soft top. And we replaced everything in her AC system, including had to pull it apart and put it in the blend door. And I've used my gauges, set all my Freon to what I thought it should be, and we're still only getting in between 60 to 65 degrees out of the vent.
Okay. I want you to take your needle nose vice grips and put some rubber hose over the two needle nose, and I want you to pinch off one of the brake lines. Or no, the
okay.
heater lines. Okay? And then I want you
okay.
to drive it. I'm stopping the heater from getting hot. So if there's a big change there, then we have to go to the controls and figure out why we're not shutting down the door to keep the hot out of the cold. Another thing I want you to do is on its best day, I want you to pull off to the side of the road, and there's two lines at the compressor. One's big, one's small, high side, low side. Big one, the fat one. Put your hand around it. Tell me how cold it is. Is it ever frosty? So this isn't, I mean, what'd you do on the oil exchange when you replaced the compressor? How did you accomplish that?
We vacuumed out all the lines, and then we dumped out the oil that was in the compressor and made sure that it turned it so all of it came out. And then when we put the whole system in, then we sucked the oil back into the compressor itself.
Okay. See, we don't do it that way. What we typically do, is we measure the oil out of the compressor. Let's just pretend it's 2 ounces. The new compressor comes with 4. Well, if we got 2 in your compressor, we got 2 in the rest of the system. So we're likely to just dump the 4 out of the compressor and put 2 in, knowing full well we got another 2 ounces. Now maybe we'll put 3 in. But that's kind of the decision after he pulls the Schrader valves, how much oil is coming out of the fittings. And now, when you pulled the vacuum on it, how did you do that?
We had the gate set, had a vacuum pump, and I just brought it down, vacuumed it for an hour. It held at both needles were under 0, and then I closed the system up, let it sit for 2 hours, made sure that I was holding
okay.
the vacuum on the entire system, and then that's when we put the Freon in.
Okay. I think what's in your best interest is we need some help, and I think you take it to a shop and you say, I've replaced everything and I can't get it to blow cold. What's your checkout charge? Andy, I'm on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I got an OO Wrangler, and he's already made his wife mad because he can't fix the air conditioning. So he says, oh, she's already listening. So Andy, what does he say to you to accomplish his goal?
I don't understand what you're saying.
Okay, he comes in and says, everything in the air conditioning is new. Here's a list of the parts I've put on, and I can't get more than 60 degrees. And here's the deal. We're in this. We're not even in the summer. It's 60.
Yeah.
So, we got a big problem here. But pinch off the heater line, but just say, what's your checkout charge?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wasn't clear where you're going. Yeah, just I would give him, for something like that, I mean, I would say it would be... Oh.
A range.
Yeah. I mean, at the most, I would say 70 to the 140. That's basically an hour's worth of time. But I think it's going to be something a lot more simple than that.
And
so
we got to find it, and then we got to fix it.
Yeah.
So there's two things here. And we don't know if you got the Freon right, but certainly our guys would be able to quickly determine if the Freon level's right, and they would quickly determine if you've got too much oil in the system and stuff like that.
And you sound, mechanically inclined, so you sound like you know what you're talking about, but I'll say that there's a lot of customers that come in that say, I've replaced everything on my AC system, and to them that's like the compressor or an AC hose or, things like that. So in our industry, I think we just kind of ask more questions. What does that include? What does that mean? Because there's so many components to the AC system, as you know.
But he said blend door. He talked about flushing the lines. He talked about trying to get the refrigerant right.
So I think he's done a lot more than just,
Right. But then he talks about the blend door. But do you really know what the blend door does?
Absolutely. It closes off the two sides. I pulled the entire dash apart, put a new blend door in because our shaft on the original one, which is, 20 years old, had snapped in half.
Okay.
He put the dash back together. And the car's running again.
Yeah.
So you know what you're doing.
Okay, but wait a minute. What I'm thinking is the blend door is only one half of the whole system.
Sure.
So there's controls on the air conditioning and the climate controls that actually make that, and that's three position. Well, actually, it's more than three. It could be five. So we got full shut and full open and then everything in between.
Sure.
So if he asks for 70 degrees, it might be in the middle, giving him a little cold and a little warm.
Yeah.
But if he pinches off that line, then I think that's the first place to start is let's pinch off one of the heater hoses, and let's go drive it and see if we got it.
Yeah.
So anyway, good luck in David, and I hope your wife still loves you at the end of this conversation. and because of that, we're going to Kathy right now. Kathy, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. I've got a 99 Dodge 3500 Ram club cab, and I've had it too. I can't even tell you how many mechanics in how many different states. If you let the fuel get below a quarter of a tank and turn the truck off, when you turn it back on, it will not shift out of first. If it's an automatic transmission.
Okay.
If you turn it off or leave it on, it doesn't matter. Add more fuel, it shifts fine.
I have
and
no
I
idea.
And I duplicate that every single time.
Okay.
The
real question is not the fuel. The real question is what is it missing when it doesn't run? That's the real question. You've tied it to the level of the fuel, and of course at the end of the day, we'll know if that had something to do with the problem. But in reality, a no start or a crank but no catch, I need fuel and air. That's all I need. And I need timing.
It's not that it starts fine. It just won't shift out of park.
She can't get it out of park.
So you can't move it from park?
No, I can move it. I can move it to drive. It's an automatic transmission. But then the truck itself will not shift out of park. If I get below a quarter of a tank of fuel and do not turn the truck off, it continues to run fine.
Okay. I've never seen that before. I mean, I've never heard of that before. But you want an answer, and I don't think you're going to get an answer until it's fixed. And I my advice is don't hold everybody to the three, four, five other guys that have tried and couldn't. The real question is why won't it shift out? We can answer the question why it's tied to the fuel after we fix it.
And you're able to duplicate it all? Like, have shops actually duplicated it? They just can't find it?
Yep, they've duplicated it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I
dealerships have, private shops have, it's a lonely shop have. And they have no idea. Mm-hmm. I was hoping you guys had seen it before.
No, I don't know anybody that's seen it. I am surrounded by Ram trucks. So there's a lot.
I have another Ram truck. I've always had Ram trucks, and this okay. is the only one that doesn't.
Yeah. Well, again, you're the first person that's ever. I've been in this. I'm 65 years old. I've been a master for 35 years. I've never heard of any car with the symptoms you're describing. There's got to be a simple reason. The question is the command going to the transmission to shift into second gear, and is the speedometer reporting the right speed? And maybe this has nothing to do with the fuel, which I think is the case, but I think there's an issue with the controller, and it won't let it shift out of first gear because I don't know why. The computer has to see the RPM and has to see speed in order to shift from first to second. So, and it has to see throttle activity. So I don't know how about strictly diesel up north
in Flagstaff?
No, on what is it? Pinnacle there, Peak
no,
and I-10.
I think no.
Hold on, we're looking for it.
Pinnacle Peak in this 17 area.
Yeah. I would call Nate at Strictly Diesel. Forget the fuel thing. Just say there are intermittently times where I can put it in first gear and it won't shift out of first gear. Then if he's never seen it, that's the real key there. Have you ever seen this? Then I'd go to automatic transmission exchange and ask him, why won't it shift out of first? I can demonstrate it to you. I can show
you. But it only does it when I turn it off.
Okay. Okay. All right. Kathy, thank you very much. I've given you the very best advice I can give you. And I cannot tie the two of them together, and I don't think that's important. I think when somebody fixes it, they'll have a reasonable explanation. But to use the fact that this fuel level problem is causing the problem is just a waste of time. So it's kind of like, I got a problem with my hip, but my left ear rings when I do that. Well, how about we just take a look at the hip, and then we'll deal with the ear ringing later. Hey, Terry, good morning. Terry, how can I help you?
Oh, we have to take one last break.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. We're going to take a break, but Terry, you stay right there, and we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 47 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Just like we promised, we're going to go to Terry, but 602-508-0960. We're probably going to be able to get one more caller in. Lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. Terry, thank you for holding during the commercial break. How can I help you?
Yeah, I've got an 03 small Chevy S10.
Okay.
And the ABS lights, both of them, come on only when the thermostat hits 195. So if you keep it cool, nothing, no lights on.
Okay, now, are you talking about the temperature gauge on the dashboard once it hits 195?
Yeah, when the thermostat opens.
Okay.
As far as that having anything to do with ABS, I don't know why.
Yeah, I can't make the connection either, Terry. The ABS and the cooling system and the thermostat operation and the radiator and the cooling fan and all that kind of stuff has no effect on your ABS. I think now you talk about both lights. You probably have a red brake and a red ABS. Yes.
Red. Maybe one of them's orange. I'm not,
okay.
Fair enough.
I think I would just deal with that. Mm-hmm. So you just take it in and say, what's your checkout? Andy said it before, 70 to 140. It's going to be somewhere. Everybody's going to be different. But what we prefer to do is give you the best and the worst.
So
it's not going to be less than 70, and it's not going to be more. But this is one of those things. Cross your fingers every once in a while, maybe once a week. It costs $108.50 to find it and $2 to fix it.
I know.
So, and then I'm thinking that what you've got is a wheel sensor, because you probably have ABS. And if that's the case, then when the computer loses sight of the speed of one of the wheels, it'll turn that light on. The brake light, I don't know, but I think I'd go after the ABS first to see if that repair fixed the brake. But I certainly wouldn't do both of them at the same time. My personal opinion is we're going to chase one and then the other.
Yeah, and you can get on a freeway before the thermostat opens, and without ever touching the brakes, it just comes on when you see the temperature gauge hit about 195. Yeah.
Okay, and that's got to be a wheel sensor. The key words there you said is you get on the freeway without touching the brakes.
Yeah, never touching them.
Okay. Right. I'd like him as a customer because that's a really good hint.
Yeah.
That's a really good hint. What part of town do you live in?
Scottsdale. I used to hang around with old Mike and Leon down at Tri-City.
Oh, boy, you're an old timer.
Before they opened.
You know what?
When they worked over on 7th.
Yes, yes.
The guy that got killed up in Utah, I can't remember his name now.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah,
I
can't remember his name.
I dealt with Mike and Leon since 1973.
Yeah.
And let me tell you what happened. I had this 70 Chevelle, and it had a 4-speed, and it was faster than lightning. So I had three big guys in the car, and I'm not no spring chicken. So I'm driving, and there's Mario, and then there's Gregory, and then there's somebody else. So there's lots of meat on this car, and I decide that I'm going to show them how bad this Chevelle is with a 396, and I take her up in first gear, and I slam second gear and leave the transmission all over the street. So I'm sweating bullets, and so I put it all back together, and I take it over to Mike and Leon and say, can you do anything for me? And they said, yeah, we can slap you in the head. So anyway, they fixed my transmission, and since that day, we opened up our garage in 1979, and I've done business with them until it changed hands. But nevertheless, if you're over there near Carol Bell's shop at 87th Street and McDowell, he's a good guy.
Yeah, I hang out and have a beer right across the street.
Yeah, well, just and who's the Craig and his wife
Vicky.
Yeah. Craig and Vicky. You just
people. Tell
Craig Mark Salem says that he doesn't have a prayer in hell of fixing your car or diagnosing it and see what he says.
Yeah, he's been there a long time since that was a gas station.
Mm-hmm. And you're right, and it's Vicky's dad that started it. No, it isn't either. It's Craig's dad that started it. It's because his name is Craig. It's Vicky Bell? I don't know.
No.
Both Bell.
Well, yeah,
anyway,
it's probably Craig's dad.
Yeah, Carol and his wife's phone, her name was right on Elaine. I think it was Carol and Elaine. They've been around gas stations since Texaco was a baby. So, yes, we're all part of that same group, Terry. And you're part of it, too.
I'm older than you.
There's a lot of people that are older than me, but there's a lot of people, like you say, there's a lot of people that are younger than me. But, you know, the gray hair tells people that we've been around the block a couple of times, so that's a good thing. Or the lack of hair tells them even better that we've been around the block a couple of times.
Yeah.
All righty, Terry. Thank you very much. Thank you
very
much. When it comes to, what have we got? We have another caller? Did I hear the gun?
Yes, we do. That would be Larry.
Larry, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
So I got a question. I've got a 15 Hyundai Elantra, and it doesn't really seem to matter if it's hot or cold, and it doesn't do it every time. When I turn the key on to start the car, it will backfire through the exhaust, and it does it probably 6 out of every 10 times I start it, cold or hot, no check engine light. It runs perfect. Fuel economy has not changed. Any ideas what could cause that?
You covered just about all the bases I was going to cover.
Yeah.
It only backfires once. Like I hit the key and it'll boom. Instantly, as soon as I touch the key, it'll backfire one time out the exhaust.
Okay. Is it a thunderous backfire or not?
No.
Okay. I think what you should do if you want to work on this yourself is, if it does it every morning, lift up the hood and carefully with the rag and the key in your pocket, carefully with the rag, squiggle and turn left and right the boot on one of the spark plugs. Okay?
Okay.
And then you start it up. If it backfires tomorrow, we're going to try a different spark plug. The question really is which cylinder, and the key word you said is it only does it once.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's got one cylinder there, and I don't know why this is happening, but I think the first step in the diagnosis is find out which cylinder's causing this. So if you say, I disconnected all the spark plugs and they bow, 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 bow every morning, but when I did number three, it hasn't, I disconnected before I started and it never happens. Now, the only other thing I can think of is we have primary system on the ignition and the secondary is the spark that makes you cry. If we've got some kind of a contact where we're sending spark down a wire where we really shouldn't because they're loomed or tied together, that could be it. And if you find that three or four or five of them are all tied together, then spread them out and see what happens. The other thing you can... Go ahead.
Yeah, by removing a spark plug boot, are you thinking maybe it's a bad boot? Because it's a coil on plug
situation. Okay. Coil over, they call that. Coil over. Now, you can't do that. Yeah, you can't do that. But one of the things you could do if you want to is take the little screws out, pop the coil out, and the little bitty spark plug boot that's on there. Pull the spark plugs out and look to see if any of them are different. See if one of them's black and the rest are tan. Maybe run a compression test. The other thing, how many miles are on your Elantra?
Maybe 90.
Okay. I'm just wondering if it's got one of the intake valves that's sticking open. And probably, if it were mine, I'd probably take the valve cover off of it and just tap each one of those rockers gently and see if any of them sound different. You can imagine that you're going to hit it. And you're going to roll the cam off so you're on the low side of the lobe as you do this. But we just take a hammer and gently hit the rocker assembly, and we can hear the valve open and then snap shut. Maybe a valve, as I sit here and talk to myself, maybe a valve adjustment would be the appropriate thing. But the electronic coil, you can disconnect the wire to the coil that sits over the spark plug, and that would disable that cylinder.
I do have an extra set of coils, I have two extra coils. I might just put one of those on, cylinder one, cylinder two, cylinder three, and over a four-day period, see if that makes a difference.
Well, here's the reason I'm telling you to take the coils off. I want to take the spark away from a cylinder one at a time. Because if I take the spark away and you don't have the explosion, then I know that the problem is related to that cylinder. So the what we talked about, and it was my fault, that's a diagnostic process. We're going to try to find the cylinder affected by that. So,
All righty.
That's the best I can take. Thank you very much. That's a really unusual one. Mm-hmm. In all my years, I've never had anybody actually have that symptom.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that he doesn't have the symptom.
1 minute.
It's really a situation where he does, but I don't even have a clue. I'm kind of thinking out loud that we got to isolate the cylinder.
I'm sure, yeah. I mean, if he doesn't find it, I'm sure. If you left it overnight at a shop for a shop to start cold, like he's describing, because that's what you have to do. I mean, if it's only happening one time and it's the first start of the day.
There's an explosion that's happening, and we need air, fuel, and spark. And the only way we can pop out that tailpipe and backfire real bad is we have air, fuel, and spark. Mm-hmm. And so... I don't know. I don't know. But anyway, if you have an email question, mark@salemboysauto.com, mark@salemboysauto.com. My daughter Andy's been with me on the show. She runs the operation. So if you have any questions, you're certainly welcome to call Salem Boys Auto and talk to Andy. Until then, wear your seatbelt, don't drink and drive, and don't criticize your wife when she's driving, because that's just simply a bad idea. And I speak from experience.